Chapter 4. Write down all the things that are fucking you up or have ever fucked you up, and don't lie or leave anything out. Step 4 is an admin-heavy step that will require visual representation if you have that option. Go to russellbrand.com, the recovery section, and pull up the appropriate step. This step is a 4-column table. It'll be very, very helpful if you look at a visual representation. Just have a glance at it. If you're in a car, don't career off into a roundabout. Wait till you get home. But if you can, glance at the visual aid memoir or a visual representation available on russellbrand.com, it'll be very helpful when covering this admin-heavy and very practical step. Step 4. We made a searching and fearless moral inventory of ourselves. I avoided step 4 like I owed it money. Fuck that. Fuck it on so many levels. Most obviously, I just can't be bothered to sit and write out in a stringent and formalised fashion every single bloody thing I can remember that has caused me to be disturbed, to have an emotion, energy in motion, a twitch, a glitch, a mental emotional spasm sculpting the new normal. Every time I felt some kid at school slight me, or a teacher didn't like me, or a grandparent wasn't Disney enough, or when girls didn't fancy me, or I lost a fight, or West Ham lost, or another kid in another continent got a part in a film, or it rained, or a birthday cake caught fire, or my mum laughed too loudly at a party, or a train was late, or I'm too fat, or my dick's not big enough. The list goes on, and it all seems like a lot of effort until you remember steps 1, 2, and 3. I'm fucked. It could improve. I better do what I'm told. Plus, how much time have I given over to watching TV or staring out of windows or pursuing pointless relationships or looking at my Twitter mentions? Those hours all add up and are sadly deducted from the overall life total. They are not a break from life, these harmless distractions. They are life. They are life and they are death. If you want me to actually quantify it time-wise, it took me 5 years and 2 days to do step 4. 5 years to not do it and 2 days to do it. That's it, 2 days. For 2 days I wrote and wrote and remembered and remembered and I was thorough. I put anything that crossed my mind down on that list. Most people can't be asked to make a personal inventory. I was clean and sober for 5 years based on the first 3 steps and the support of other addicts. The point of this inventory is to assess and understand the many complex interconnecting beliefs that I carry around that underwrite my behaviours, patterns and habits. It was at this point in my program that I began to plainly recognise that my substance abuse was the symptom of a more profound problem. I was instructed by my mentor, someone who has worked the steps already, to write down everyone that I knew between the ages of 0 and 5 years old, then 5 and 10, 10 and 15, 15 and 20, and so on. Between 5 and 10, there were a smattering of friends and families and neighbours. Life was simple then. As I grew older, more institutions and individuals came into my life, and you know what? I had a grudge of some kind against pretty much all of them. Once I'd been through my entire life writing down anyone I could remember or any institution or object or indeed concept that I had a resentment against, the next phase began. I divided up an exercise book into 4 columns. If you want to see a visual representation of this, and I recommend you do, go to my website, russellbrand.com, and look in the recovery section where all of the written exercises are freely available. At the top of column 1, we write, I resent. Column 2, because. 3, this affects my. And for column 4, we put my part. In the left-hand column, I put the person, place or thing against which I had a resentment. In my case, it was likely my dear old mum. That's right, you have to be entirely honest and start at the beginning, so down she goes, mum. Then the second column. Into this, I put the cause of my resentment. For getting cancer when I was 7. It doesn't matter that it's not my mum's fault that she got cancer. This process isn't about justification or correct allocation of blame. It's an inventory of feelings. Feelings that are muddled and misunderstood and form a matrix of discontent that in the addict personality lead to destructive and unconscious behaviours. This step is about bringing unconscious behaviour to light. In the third column, we write what it is in us that's affected. We ran through these categories in step 3. Pride, what I think you think about me. Self-esteem, what I think about myself. Personal relations, the script I give others. Sexual relations, as above, pertaining to sex. Ambitions, what I want in life, my overall vision of my perfect self. Security, what I need to survive. Finances, money, and how it affects my feelings. So with this example, resentment against my mum, which I'd unconsciously harboured for 20 years until I got clean, then another 5 until I undertook this inventory, I look at the effects it's had on me. Pride. Do I think it affects the way other people think about me? Not clearly. So I don't put P, we can abbreviate to the initial, in the third column. Self-esteem. Do I feel guilty or ashamed about it? Actually, yes, because another relative told me, and I believed, that my mother being sick was my fault because I was bad. Which, incidentally, is a whole other resentment in itself that will have to be worked through separately. So, SE, for self-esteem, goes in the third column. Personal relations. My mum getting cancer is not how I saw the script for my relationship with her panning out. So this area was affected. Many subsequent relationships with women were also affected by this aberration. I've been overly reliant on women ever since, so PR, for personal relations, goes into the third column. The next area is sexual relations. Now, we don't need to reanimate the corpse of dear Sigmund Freud to deduce that my subsequent sexual relations have in some way been affected by my relationship with my mother, and this illness and my resentment about it are defining aspects of that relationship. So, SR, for sexual relationships, goes into the third column. This in turn affects my ambitions to have a normal and happy domestic life, so A goes into the third column too. My security, my requirements for basic domestic fulfillment was also for a long time affected by this resentment, so that goes into the third column. Finances, the final category, were not affected in any obvious way, so there's no need for F to be in the third column. So at this stage, the resentment table would read, I resent Mum because she got cancer. This affects my SE, self-esteem, PR, personal relations, SR, sexual relations, A, ambitions, S, security. The fourth column, my part, is as yet unfilled in. Now, my analysis of myself and my own psyche and its various attachments and consequences is obviously subjective. That is why this process is undertaken with the guidance and experience of a mentor. The fifth step is ultimately about sharing this inventory with at least one other person, ideally the one who guided you through its construction. And it is this confession that helps to realign your perspective of these events. In a sense, we rewrite our past. We change our narrative. We reprogram ourselves. There is no objective history, this we know, only stories. Our character is the result of this story we tell ourselves about ourselves, and the process of inventorying breaks down the hidden and destructive personal grammar that we have unwittingly allowed to govern our behaviour. At this point in the exercise, we are reminded that we have to let go of our opinion of how other people, places and things ought to be. My mum, my girlfriend Laura, and the government of North Korea are not obliged to moderate their reality in accordance with my whims. If I make my happiness contingent on them behaving in a certain way, I am fucked. I have to petition the universe, my innermost self, God, or whatever it is that I believe might be more powerful than me, to adjust my view. The view that my feelings have a meaningful bearing on the external world. We don't trouble ourselves unduly with soteriology, whether or not sacrifice or practice on the human plane reaches supernatural or materially inaccessible realms is too bloody complex. Basically, we accept that the world is the way it is, but we ourselves can change. What we learn from the information in the fourth column is most likely to facilitate change. The anonymous sage that formulated the version I use suggests that we ask ourselves the following questions with any resentment. I'll use my previous example of my mum's illness to demonstrate. 1. Pertaining to this resentment, where did I make a mistake? With my mum and her illness, I have made a mistake in imagining that she has any agency over her own cancer. Also, in holding on to this belief for 30 years. 2. Where have I been selfish? I have allowed myself to become insular in my self-preservation because of the fear that I would lose my mum. 3. Where was I dishonest? I used her illness to extract sympathy, advantage, and guilt from others, knowing it was a kind of collateral. 4. Where was I self-seeking? I wasn't really self-seeking in a way that we haven't yet covered in the other categories that was problematic. 5. Where was I afraid? This is usually the most revealing question in the fourth column, and the data we gather from this line of inquiry for me personally holds the key to freedom and change. Behind our damaged perceptions, there is usually a fear that pertains to a core belief. This core belief is a key line in the code of our personal misery. If we expose, address, and alter it, we can be free. So behind my resentment at my mum's illness is my fear that I will be left alone and that I can't take care of myself. This false belief is present in many of my most destructive behaviours. My guess is that it will be there in yours too. 6. Where am I to blame? In this example, I am not to blame in any way that is distinct from what's been covered by the other questions. 7. Where am I at fault? This question asks us to look at our defective characteristics, which are usually present when we are resentful. Some examples of defective characteristics are arrogance, avarice, contempt, cowardice, cruelty, disobedience, distrust, domination, envy, gluttony, impatience, impenitence, indifference, intolerance, jealousy, lack of discipline, laziness, lust, malice, overambition, oversensitivity, presumption, pride, prudery, pugnacity, retaliation, self-pity, sentimentality, shame, hurt, pride, snobbery, timidity, vanity, violation of confidence, wastefulness. Usually, when I am disturbed, fearful, or disconnected, I am exhibiting some of these traits. In this childhood resentment against my mother's illness, the defective characteristics, self-pity, sentimentality, intolerance, and laziness are all present. Question 8. Where was I wrong? This crosses over categorically with mistakes and blame, but is there specifically to identify other people that have been wronged by your behaviour. In this example, my mum has been harmed by my subsequent unavailability, so I make a note of that as it will become relevant later when we reach step 8. The fearless and thorough consideration of all these questions ensures no data will be left uncovered if we are honest, open, and willing. The completed table will be like this. I resent my mum because she got cancer. This affects my self-esteem, my personal relations, sexual relations, ambitions, and security. The fourth column, my part, is where the opportunity for change and transition takes place. Question 1. Were there mistakes? Yes. Holding on to a 30-year-old resentment and unconsciously blaming my mother for circumstances that she couldn't possibly control. Secondly, was I selfish? Yes, I regarded the situation only from my own perspective, never considering how it was affecting other people, notably my mother. 3. Was I dishonest? Yes, I used the situation for various kinds of social advantage and manipulation. Or was I self-seeking, not in a way that hasn't been covered by the three previous categories? 5. Was there any fear? Yes, my unconscious, unaddressed fear that if my mother dies, I will be alone and that I cannot take care of myself. 6. Am I to blame? Not in a way that we haven't already covered. 7. Was I at fault? Yes, defective characteristics such as self-pity, intolerance, impatience, and sentimentality were all at play. 8. Was anybody wronged? Yes, in this instance, my mother has been negatively affected by my own warped perspective of a situation. The completed table acts as an aid memoir when you share its contents with the person guiding you through this process, or if you're doing it remotely without guidance, which I wouldn't advise, the person you choose to do your step 5 confession with. After you've completed this process for 20 representative resentments that give a clear depiction of your life's patterns and habits, likely a few ex-partners, family members, anyone that severely transgressed against you, school bullies, grandparents, strangers, Christmas, monarchs, road users, and Facebook, you will have a clearer understanding of the coordinates of your worldview. Now it's time for our specific fear inventory. Go through your entire list, looking specifically at the fears in the fourth column. Here is the method for arriving at a core fear as opposed to a superficial one. You have to chase the fear down to its essence like you're hunting a tenacious mosquito. For example, I might feel afraid about going for a job interview. Now, behind this is a superficial fear. I might not get the job. Well, so what? What's behind that fear? Well, if I don't get the job, I won't have enough money. Again, what's behind that fear? If I don't have enough money, I will be poor. If I am poor, I won't be able to look after myself. So the core fear in this instance is, I cannot look after myself. Or perhaps you are resentful because you asked someone on a date and they knocked you back, or someone rejected your friend request on social media. I'm afraid that this person doesn't find me attractive. So what? I'm afraid that no one finds me attractive. So what? I'm afraid that I will never find anyone to be with me. So what? I am afraid of being alone. Core fear, being alone. Isn't it a good thing to know about yourself? That you are going through life requesting friends on Facebook and asking people on dates driven by an existential fear that you will always be alone? When were you planning to address that? Is your plan to go through your finite human life motivated by unexamined dread? Is that your plan? And you wonder why you're fucking nervous? At the heart of so much activity and interaction is deep and unaddressed fear. We have to expose it. We have to amend it. We need help. Thank God you're listening to this, you lunatic. Now, obviously, you can't undertake this process alone, using your limited and highly biased worldview to come up with a solution, especially as it's your head that got you into this dilemma. When I undertook this process, it was with men who were further down the path than me. You will also require help. These first three steps have their fair share of mysticism. The first step and its principle of honest self-appraisal and surrender. The second with its call for hope. The third with the outlandish requirement for faith. If this is challenging for you, then the fourth step will provide ontological respite, but requires great practical effort. Steps 4 and 5 are the inescapable admin steps. Up until this point, you can get by on agreeing with some abstract concepts, that you are powerless over people, places and things, that when you exert control, your life, your experience of life becomes unmanageable, that it is possible that there is another way, that the way you live isn't the only possible way, that by conceding authority, you will access new data. It was obvious I was powerless over heroin. It was clear that the people that taught me this program had found another way. It was as plain as day that I needed to be taught new skills. In the case of straightforward addictions, you get to work a kindergarten version of this program. The object, the symbol, is clearly defined. It isn't easy. No one likes going through withdrawal or delirium tremens, but it does have the advantage of being easily identifiable. The problem of denial is hopefully easier to confront. If you're chugging through life in a job you kind of dislike, a relationship that you are detached from, eating to cope, staring at Facebook, smoking and fruitlessly fantasizing you can sit glumly on that conveyor belt of unconscious discontent until it deposits you in your grave. We take stock of all the beliefs and resentments that populate our conscious experience of the world. If this is done thoroughly, we begin to see where our explicit beliefs intersect with our unconscious beliefs. An example, my former belief that I needed to sleep with a lot of women, when unscrutinized, could pose as culturally acceptable, cool, fun, aspirational, harmless. Once thoroughly inventoried, this behavior was exposed as desperate, pitiful, toxic, lonely. The behavior had been designed or adopted as a strategy to prevent pain. When you check Facebook, or browse to consume, or obsess about going out, what unconscious motivation lurks unqueried? Obviously, you don't know. We are, after all, dealing with the unconscious. It's likely the architecture of your belief contains pillars such as there's nothing wrong with it, everyone does it, and there's nothing better I could be doing. This will be challenged, possibly overwhelmed, by the first three steps. In step four, we get a detailed understanding of how these codes combine and perpetuate certain behaviors. In step five, we begin to experience the revelation that is only found through connection to another. For me, this process challenged for the first time a great many of my defining yet unexamined beliefs. No one understands me. No one loves me. I am alone. I am worthless. I am different to everyone else. I cannot be loved. These constitute cumbersome personal baggage. Every time I iterate those beliefs, I feel the abdominal pang of their power and the tearfulness of this condition. Back to you. Are there things about yourself which you have never told anyone? Way back upon the creaky floors of your childhood, in your solitude, the shadows of your private mind, the things you've done and said and thought that compound and contain you. Shameful things, sexual things, often solitary acts but sometimes not, sometimes agonizing stabs of cruelty you've inflicted on people you love, or the moments where reality itself seemed to tear as they looked into your eyes and told you, you are nothing. And for a moment you stand there, adjusting to the pain that someone could say that to you, and what that must mean about who you are. Or what it means to be cruel, to have hurt someone, to feel the cords of love that bind split and flail and to fall away into yourself engulfed but absolutely alone. And you do what humans do. You accept and you adapt. You build the pain into the story of who you are until it isn't pain anymore. It's just another piece of who you are. I was touched as a child and I felt the warping like flexed glass, not entirely unpleasant. It was, after all, attention. But I knew it was a glitch, like a memory I was waiting to have, like a stone on the path that I knew I would not pass but pause to pick up and carry with me uneasily in my pocket. Finding ways to incorporate this transgression into my understanding of the world, stitching it into the fabric of my understanding. Mum is ill a lot. They say I am bad. My dad does not like me. I am not safe. I don't like school. I don't belong. People don't like me. I made mummy ill. I am bad. Until chocolate and porn and self-harm seem like sanctuary from the gentle, unbearable pain. And as we walk along, we collect and collate the familiar. The path appears before our feet as we walk and we move further from home until we are too far away to recall that we ever even had a home. The process is designed to illuminate, and it ought to be thorough and exhaustive, but it needn't be repetitive. I have learned that from a limited grid of behaviours, thoughts and feelings, I cast and project the apparent variety of my chaotic life. When analysed, I can see how there is usually a simple pattern creating this apparent mayhem. I did this under guidance. Having completed your inventory to the best of your ability, you then share it with God, yourself, and another human being. This is usually your mentor or guide, or at any rate someone you trust who is further down the path you hope to walk. If at this point you haven't identified sufficiently with one of the issues for which there is a global fellowship with a strong online presence, like alcoholism, drug addiction, sex addiction, eating disorders, codependency, relationship problems, smoking, debt, work addiction, gambling, spending, technology addiction, then my suggestion would be that you find someone from one of those movements who identifies with your particular, or rather more amorphous, problem and undergo this process with them. The possibility of founding your own group also exists based on proximity of condition or location. It is my belief and indeed prayer that we will form support communities that cover all issues all over the world, that these communities will form the basis for our continuing social evolution towards a society founded on a harmonious relationship between the inner and outer world and love and support of one another until social systems based on economics and outmoded hierarchies become obsolete. I'll just drop that in there. Step 4 exercises. Write down all the things that are fucking you up or have ever fucked you up and don't lie or leave anything out. It might be worth going to the website and looking at the Step 4 table again. In the first column, we put the thing that's pissed us off. Is it Donald Trump or some kid who bullied you at school? Could be the same person, though I've heard Donald Trump was nice at school. What I mean is, it could be a major geopolitical issue, or it could be that someone cut you up while you were driving. In the second column, we put why we're pissed off. They cut me up, or they're not acknowledging the energy crisis, or they preferred my sister, or they abused me. Nothing is too big or too small. My step 4 had both extremes on it. One way to ensure thoroughness is to write a list of everyone you can remember throughout your life, age 0 to 5, 5 to 10, 10 to 15, until the present day. I could think of things that pissed me off about people that I'd forgotten existed. It all went in the inventory. In the third column, we look at which area of our life is affected by this perceived or real transgression. Is it pride, self-esteem, personal relationships, etc.? Some resentments affect all 7 areas, some affect 1. If none are affected, what the hell's your problem? Here, once again, are the 7 areas that apply to the third column. 1. Pride. 2. Self-esteem. 3. Personal relations. 4. Sexual relations. 5. Ambitions. 6. Security. 7. Finances. In the powerful and revealing fourth column, we identify where we participated in this problem. 1. Mistakes. What could I have done differently here? 2. Selfishness. Have I sneakily been selfish without acknowledging it? 3. Dishonesty. Am I being straight up here? 4. Self-seeking. Am I after some dumb, selfish thing that maybe I need to let go of? 5. Fear. What fear lies beneath this resentment, underwriting it, that I am unlovable, that I will end up alone? 6. Blame. Am I in any way to blame for this? 7. Fault. Which defects of character am I exhibiting? 8. Wrongs. Have I damaged anyone? Will I later owe amends, apologies and restitution to someone? Again, it isn't necessary to put something for each question, but you will find that you are yourself participating in the pain that you harbour. That's why you harbour it. It's not about allocation of blame. We aren't in court. It's about moving to a different perspective where we can live in peace. Having been exhaustive with the list of people you have known and resentments you can recall, select 20 that you believe define you. Familial relationships, romantic partnerships, jobs, situations. With each item on this list of 20, complete the 4-column process. Obviously, it should be the 20 resentments that most play on your mind, the milestones and dominant coordinates of your psyche. In my opinion, and in the creed of these steps as written, it is considered crucial that you undertake this process under the guidance of someone that has previously completed it, with whom you have no conflicting connection, by which I mean not someone that you are in love with or have a long-running secret or seething feud with.